This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have got one sponsor for the show, and that is our good friends at Jam Software. We'll tell you more about them and their great product as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
Pretty good. We are having our big school auction tomorrow night, so it's been a busy week kind of getting that stuff ready.
Oh,
it's
cool.
One of our big fundraisers of the year, so lots of...
Yeah, we had one last weekend, yeah.
Lots of fun. A lot of work, usually the week of, but lots of fun. Heading into spring break here soon, and we're just coming out of re-enrollment season, and it all went well, and mm-hmm. a couple weeks of spring break, and then it's the quick ride till the end of the school year. It's another one is coming on.
Yeah,
it's hard to believe.
It's here before we know it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I have this weird situation where some of the exam classes that I teach are graded all by coursework and not by an exam, so my course is finished like... sometimes 2 months before everybody else's, because there's a pickup deadline where we have to have the work ready to send away to the exam board. And that deadline is like the 24th of April or something, and then the exams are not until like sort of May-ish time. So I always end up ending my courses quite a lot earlier than everybody else. So I end up having either, you know, time to start the next course with people, or for people who might not be continuing, you know, time to do something else after the fact.
It's like everybody's got their different schedules and trying to sync up all that. And it's like education. We want it to fit in this, like you want it to be all structured and calendarized, but be creative and be outside the box. So trying to
be creative, but make sure you fit into this very strict calendar system at the same time. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of reminded me what you tweeted something about last week where, you know, when you add things, you know, the school day isn't getting longer. So when you add things to the curriculum, you have to take things away. I mean, you can't just keep asking.
Yes, I wish somebody would realize this. It's like everywhere, you know, every organization, every charity is like, well, school should teach, insert our thing here, you know. And you're like, well, okay, so what am I going to leave out, you know? Or, you know, these monsters who think that the school day and the school year should just get longer and longer and longer, as if children are just machines you can run harder. It becomes incredibly frustrating to just have to listen to this all the time without anybody saying, well, okay, let's drop out, I don't know, cooking, or let's drop out a bit of history, or let's drop out, you know, reading or whatever, you know. Just in case anybody's listening, I'm not advocating that we stop teaching reading in schools, absolutely not. But, you know, the school day is what it is, and it's necessarily a zero-sum game. So that's the challenge for school management, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I think... In the business world, you think, okay, this is a great idea to do this. Let's hire somebody to do this. Like we can outsource this. It doesn't work in schools. I mean, it's all
hire new pupils.
hire additional students to learn. You know, like Uber, what is the? It's a terrible term today, but it's like Uber for students, or I don't know, some kind of thing. It's like I need you to come in. I need to outsource my learning to you. So you learn this, then you tell me about it later.
Well, if you were an executive level, that's exactly what you would do, right?
Right.
You'd have somebody send you a summary.
But, yeah, that is the question is, it's not, are all these things good or are these things bad? It's like, what is the priorities? And then often, like, one of the things I learned at the NAIS conference I was at, they said, tell the person next to you, what do you think makes your school great? Like, what do you think sets you apart from your other schools in your area? So I told them, and Lady told me hers. And then they said, open up your website and read your mission statement. Does it match? It's like, oh, well, that was an interesting exercise. And I think you must, like, decide on which key tent poles your school's going to stand. And everything is kind of ran through those in terms of, like, what are your priorities, what was your mission statement. Because there's always things you could do that are good and, like, could help and would help students and it would be beneficial. But is it key?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of always look at things as, like, if we don't do this, what's the consequence? And so not what's the benefit, because there's always benefits to everything. But I say if we
yeah, it's almost like everything works, but it's what works the best.
And when you start asking the question is like, what are the consequences if I remove this? Then you find out the pain points of things if they're not there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, let's stop teaching reading. What are the consequences? Oh, well, that's pretty apparent. If we stop teaching, I'm not even going to name a subject, or like if we stop teaching subject X, well, it's not really that big of a deal. It's not really a skill people need in 2017. It's not bad, but it's not something people are going to necessarily have to have.
Yeah, like Latin classes or something.
Yeah, it's not that they're bad, but So I don't know. That is the age old question. And I think you're right. Most people aren't asking that question. They're wanting to create a new initiative and push something onto like a school or a district or just education as a whole. They should be doing X. Like, okay, we're pretty maxed out on time. What should do you suggest we don't do? We should do everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that is where that tweet came from, was that somebody was kind of approvingly quoting Sir Ken Robinson, who, in my opinion, is little more than an observational comedian about schools rather than an actual, process thinker as such, and he's saying things like, well, it's absurd that we should have to argue for dance to be taught in school. And I'm like, why is that absurd? Shouldn't everything have to justify its time, is there anything that is an unalloyed good? I think reading and numeracy probably. Personally, I'm big on computer science, but other people certainly have other priorities. But it's not absurd that you should have to argue for those things. It's perfectly rational that everybody should have to argue for their place in the curriculum, given the constraints that we're talking about, So it's that kind of thing that just kind of frustrates a little bit, just listening to people who will never sit down and be an operationally responsible person for a school tell you what you should be doing, and you've got to balance off 20 different things at the same time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... I notice the people that are always advocating to add this are usually not the people that are actually having to do them.
No. But they are the kind of people who will sell you consultancy to help you do it, probably.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, this is too much cynicism already. It's only 10 minutes into the show.
So we got a good couple of weeks here lined up on Out of School. So one of the articles that's been making its rounds among like the tech circle, I guess, is about how the Chrome OS market share is on the rise. And so we'll have a link to, I read it on 9to5 Mac or Mac Rumors. So good tip. I was looking at this article, a good little Google tip. If you know there's something in the news, like an article, I remember reading that article somewhere, it was recent, just go to Google News and type it in. Like I find that to be the best place to find articles I know I read, but I can't find them. Like it's a recent thing. So this is according to research company Future Source Consulting. Out of 12.6 million mobile devices shipped to primary and secondary schools in the U.S., Chromebooks accounted for 58% of the market, up from 58%. So, meanwhile, school shipments to iPads and Mac laptops fell to 19% from about 25% of the same period, while Microsoft Windows laptops stayed stable at about 22%. So, it does appear like Chrome OS devices are on the rise in the U.S. Pretty significantly. 8% year over year is a nice growth curve for a device that really, outside of like education, is really MIA. I mean, I don't know many people that are like buying Chromebooks in mass. In reality, I don't know a lot of people that are going to like necessarily like Best Buy and buying these. They're usually going there and buying an iPad or a tablet or a traditional laptop. My opinion, my experiences. I don't see many Chromebooks in the wild.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm noticing about this article that you're talking about is that they're not really talking about how the size of the market is changing. They're just talking about share as if it's a zero-sum game again. And that's something that I think is interesting. Are schools actually buying more devices, or are they buying, somehow buying the exact same number of devices but changing their mix in some way? But I think you're right that, that device is very... has become very particularly like a U.S. education phenomenon. I certainly don't see quite the same thing over here. I know that there have been rumors for quite a long time that some big areas are over here are going Chromebook, but I don't think it's actually happened yet. So it's kind of interesting to watch that kind of headline come around and say, well, it's clearly stealing share or whatever, but maybe it is. I don't know, but I think you're right. I don't see... Like, I think a lot of nerds really like Chromebook for its kind of, I don't know, it's funny, people, like The Verge, for example, they seem to love Chromebook and hate iPad for basically the same reasons. Like, they love Chrome OS because it's so simple and stripped down, and then they hate iPad because it's limited, it's one of these interesting kind of ways that people look at stuff. Just because one thing looks like a laptop, they think it's powerful, and one thing doesn't look like a laptop, and they think it's weak. It's quite confusing sometimes.
So what we're going to do is over the next few weeks, we're going to make a case on four devices. Chrome OS, Windows, we would say like the Windows like Surface style device, or even just a regular Windows laptop. We'll kind of blump those together. Yeah. Mac and iPad, and basically lay out the reasons on why you might want to consider them. Because depending on what your goals are for a technology deployment, one is going to work better than the other. And I think it's important to start with that. We've reiterated that for years here at Out of School. Mm-hmm. It's important to start with, like, what are you wanting to do? Just as in, like, your art, if you start an art program, you'd always kind of determine what your goals are for your art project or program before you start buying supplies. You wouldn't just go to the art store and start buying random things off the shelf. You would say, okay, what do we want to do in our art class?
Actually, just Bradley, before you go on with that, I want to just point out how much I love the art analogy, because one of the things that always frustrates me about this, and I see this all the time whenever we talk about it, is that some people will say, you know, we need to know exactly what you're going to do with this thing before we'll buy it for you. And I mean, you wouldn't say that to the art teacher, right? You would say, sort of, generally, what are you trying to do? You know, what supplies do you need? I'm not asking you, you know, 3 months before you start working, what you're going to draw on this piece of paper. And that's, to me, that's like the exact kind of analogy. You're giving, you know, supplies and materials with which to build various educational experiences and artifacts and things that showcase learning. But you cannot say to an art teacher, what are you going to make with these supplies that we're buying you? And in the same way, I don't think people should be asking exactly what are you going to do with this technology. But you're right that goals are important, and the goals will evolve and the goals will change, and you will learn enough stuff that you didn't know at the time that you set the goals. So your vision will necessarily change, but to have none is I think a weak thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. And so before we get started, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamp Software. Jamp Pro is the solution for deploying, managing, and securing Apple devices. Over 3 million students are empowered by Jamf every day. Bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing the tools they need to be successful in today's classroom. Start a free trial at jamf.com, JAMF.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring Out of School this week. So let's just talk about the reasons why you'd want to deploy Chrome OS in the classroom. And really even campus-wide, even with your admin staff. And I think the first thing to would drive this is that you are heavily integrated into Google Apps. I mean, if you're an Office 365 school, you're probably not considering Chrome OS.
Well, I mean, that's a good question, isn't it, Bradley? Like, can you deploy Chrome OS sensibly if you're not making heavy use of the G Suite? You know, let's say you're on 365. Is it a sensible thing to do to go Chrome OS?
Well, the problem is most of the, and we'll talk about this later, most of the deployment system is built around your Google user account. I mean, that's other than just you would have to have just a guest login each time, or just, I mean, it's heavily integrated into that G Suite authentication system, which to me, G Suite is a terrible name. But it is, to me, G Suite is the modern cloud-based authentication system. I know for a lot of schools, like Active Directory just doesn't exist anymore. If you're not heavily using a Windows Server environment, Exchange, you don't have a reason for Active Directory in a lot of situations. If you're heavily integrated in, it's a nice environment. Just in the same way, if you are heavily integrated into Exchange in the Microsoft Office environment, like you probably want to lean more towards things that are Windows based. Now, I'll say, you know, we've mentioned, so you've got the G Suite with Chrome OS, you've got the Exchange environment with Microsoft devices. Apple's tools here are okay at best. I think that's the glaring wart for Mac and iPad, is they don't have a strong integration with, I don't know, like iCloud for Schools, where you get like brand domain email and things like that. I mean, yes, you can get iCloud accounts for students, but it's not comparing apples to apples to the G Suite and how, I mean, everybody's got their domain name and that's where your email's going. That to me is a glaring weakness in Apple's selling point of iPad and Mac deployments in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that Apple has in its favor is that their platform is strong enough that the other guys have to be on their platform, you know, whereas Apple doesn't feel a need to be on their platforms. But you're right. I think, you know, with the Microsoft argument and the Chrome OS argument, you're looking at a really strong vertical integration. And I suppose to some extent in the Apple world, you're looking at that with things like iTunes U, for example, right? You know, we're a school where you're heavily using iTunes U, we're using iPad, and we're nicely integrated that way. But we use G Suite for the, you know, the cloud storage and the email and things like that and the calendar. So it's Apple at least has kind of some power to get other people onto their platform. But you're right that when you're looking at Chrome OS in particular, you're looking at really almost necessarily being migrating your back end to their cloud services as well. I mean, okay, you could have a 365 account and a G Suite account. You know, we have some students who have that for various reasons, but in principle, you're looking for that G Suite account to be your login identity for the device, and then your email comes along, and your life will be a whole lot simpler, I think, if you are G Suite on the back end as well.
Well, and so that's a depending on your perspective, that's a benefit and a negative. You are locked into being G Suite all in or not, and so depending on your perspective, it's lock in versus integration, depending on the way you look at it. So, I mean, that's your decision as a school, and that's part of it. The second thing, and this is a topic we've discussed for years, is mean time to replace. You know, if a student brings you a broken device, how long does it take you to get that up and running? And I think John Syracuse said this on a recent ATP episode. You know, one of the neat things about a Chrome OS device is, like, you do anything, wait 5 seconds, throw it out the window, and, like, you can pick up a new device and access it. And that's fantastic. I mean, that absolutely is fantastic. Like, I still have people around here that try to use Office for things, and I really want to get to where we don't even deploy Office. And it's like, oh, Word crashed and didn't save everything. It's like, why are you using Word over Google Docs? Like, I don't even understand. And but you know, that does, you know, you have to ask the question, like, okay, you're never then doing enough that is so bandwidth intensive that it's like instant save. You know, it's gonna limit the kind of multimedia.
I mean, I think for me that's both the blessing and the curse of Chrome OS, is that that's true as long as you're doing things that sync within a few seconds on school upstream bandwidth as well, which is another conversation, you know. But if you're shooting like 4K video somehow and then ingesting that onto a Chromebook, let's hypothetically say, how are you going to edit that? Well, probably what you're going to do is upload it to YouTube and use the online editor there, but then, you know, then you've probably more or less straight away lost that great feature that you thought you had with Chrome OS, which was instantaneous backups and, you know, the ability to log into any other device. I think once you start doing the same kinds of things that you do, say, on an iPad, for example, where a lot of our kids will throw off that kind of project quite easily, you start to run into the same kind of constraints, because networks are networks. And that's something that I think is still a challenge for Chrome OS, is to break out of that kind of office kind of mode of working, if you know what I mean. And that's something that I'm interested to see more of, if schools are doing more advanced sort of next generation project type stuff with Chrome OS, and is that even possible, or are you doing what is kind of my pet contention with Chrome OS, is you're just doing Microsoft Office but cheaper, and that's, I guess, that's my question.
The third thing is you do get a full web experience with, you know, really 100% compatibility with websites. And, you know, obviously education websites are, you know, that's terrible. If you're not an app, you're a website. I don't know of many strong educational platforms that are desktop applications in 2017.
Yeah, the only one I can think of is Adobe Creative Suite.
True, yeah.
For some schools.
That's
for
true.
Some schools.
And I do think they even have versions of that are working on Chrome OS, or they were working on that. I need to check in on that. And this is a huge benefit.
Yeah, I'm not up to date with that either, but I think I would be interested to know, like, if you look at the Chrome OS web version of whatever and the iPad app version of whatever, you know, is the Chrome OS version, like, significantly more powerful than the iPad version? You know, I don't know. I just haven't seen it. I don't know. But I'm curious to know if they've maybe stripped it down for the web as well.
And even though that Flash is really going away, and now in the most recent versions of Chrome OS, like, Flash is kind of off by default. It defaults to HTML5 now. We ran into an issue with that this summer. It still can do Flash, worst case. And I'm sure that's a short-term problem or short-term benefit, mm-hmm. because Flash is just going away in general, which good riddance. But, again, full web experience. And say what you will about Mobile Safari, like there are some websites it just is garbage on. And I don't know that it's necessarily the fault of Mobile Safari. It's just that these websites are aren't written to work on an iPad website. They're meant, those kind of things are meant to be an app on iPad.
Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing where you've got, like, the thing that always kills me is the idea that you've got, that people are still designing websites that require you to hover over elements to see them work, you know. And then you've got to sort of tap it once and then to set the hover state and then tap it again. And people are just like, why am I tapping this twice? You know, so they end up tapping everything twice on the web and it's confusing. But, you know, what can Apple do about fixing all the web designers in the world? That's probably an impossible job.
Number four is Android apps. And this is a relatively new thing. All Chromebooks shipping in 2017 will support Android apps. Now, it doesn't have the entire Google Play Store. They've been slowly porting over applications that can run on that. And is that a benefit? It sounds like it. We'll see if in practice it does. Mm-hmm. I mean, the question is, like, you know, I'm thinking of an app like 1Password. Yeah, that's when I look at, like, my app ecosystem, that's the one thing that's the hardest to replace, because, like, like, I love 1Password. It's absolutely my favorite app. And when I even, my music is Spotify, my, you know, task manager's Todoist, Slack is obviously works on the web. The Mac app of Slack is essentially just the web interface. Everything's pretty much available on Chrome OS. Now, I know there are things like LastPass that can work on Chrome OS. It's 100% cloud based, where even though 1Password syncs to the web, it's still a local application. You know, if they bring an app like that, I mean, does it fill the gaps enough for Chrome OS, or does Android on Chrome OS, is it like a, is it the equivalent of, like, you know, universal applications on PowerPC and Intel Macs, or blowing up the iPhone application on an iPad? Yeah, it functionally works, but nobody wants to do it. We'll see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I wonder, one of the things I've always kind of been a bit dubious about Chrome OS is where, like, when you need an additional capability on your device, quite often what it involves is, like, connecting somebody else's app to your Google account and giving it a whole lot of permissions, and then potentially transferring your data off of Google's cloud onto some other unknown server to do some work. And I wonder if one aspect of having Android apps is that you may actually be able to end up doing quite a lot more local work on the Chromebook itself rather than doing that much stuff server-side. So, I mean, I had one example where I had a bunch of Google Docs that I wanted to turn into PDFs and then merge together into one PDF document. And that involved connecting some random app that I found in the Chrome store, the Chrome web store, and then it would individually script to turn the documents into PDFs. And then it took all the PDFs off to their server and merged them. And I'm like, well, where's that going, you know? So maybe Android apps will make it, you know, a wee bit more kind of understandable, perhaps, as to what the actual sort of data governance pathway of your Chrome OS device is as well.
Yeah, we had that same issue today here. I had somebody that was, like, trying to open a PDF in Google Drive, and then somehow she had at some point connected an app. It was like a PDF to Word converter, and it was trying to open it in that. I don't even know. She didn't know how she did it. But we got it. I mean, I disconnected it. It was fine. But, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. We'll see. I mean, there's never been a great Android tablet that's really been, like, iPad level, and so we'll see if these apps scale up to be 13-inch when they really haven't done well to scaling up to 10-inch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's the kind of case where it's like you have an Android app kind of on your sidebar, and then you have your Chrome OS window in, like, three quarters of your screen, you know, like kind of like iPad multitasking, you know, and maybe that's where that mostly lives, and, you know, for that it probably is a benefit of sorts.
Yeah, we'll see. That's supposed to be the big thing this year. Number five is it's really inexpensive to go one-to-one compared to other devices. I mean, you can get Chromebooks as low as $199. And, I mean, they're not the best Chromebooks, but they're Chromebooks. But, I mean, and I think you know, if your question is, like, shared iPads or one-to-one Chromebooks, that's a nice alternative. And again, I mean, you don't always want to necessarily go the cheapest device, but, I mean, they are inexpensive. They are very inexpensive.
No, I mean, I've said for a very long time that when people look at our school, the thing that they think is the magic is iPad, and what is really the magic is one-to-one. And that sometimes people don't want to hear that, because what that means is you got to you got to buy and manage like 350 computers for your school instead of buying like 20 iPads and having the magic that way. But in truth, what I've always said to people is, look, you buy the device that gets you the closest, gets you to one-to-one the soonest. Because for me, one-to-one is like a transformational level. And anything below that is not the same as one-to-one, no matter how you cut and dice your multiple logins in Chrome OS or your shared iPad deployment or whatever. One-to-one is a completely different, culturally, it's a different thing in your school than if you have shared anything. So if your deal is, we can either go one-to-one in Chrome OS or we can go one-to-two in iPad, then definitely go Chrome OS. No, absolutely no doubt about it. It's a completely different game.
Next thing is vendor shopping. A lot of different folks make Chromebooks. You know, when you're if you go iPad or Mac, you really only buy these from Apple and maybe a few resellers that are roughly selling them at the same price. You know, the good old days of buying HP and Dell is you just kind of pitted them against each other. And
vendor cage fight, yeah.
Right. It's like, they're giving me this. Can you give me that? Or what kind of warranty can you give me? But at the same time, like, you know, it's like hard to know which one's good. It's like, is it cheaper because they're using cheaper parts? Do they give me a better deal? Is it just better leasing terms? Like, it's kind of more difficult to know. But you do get to shop. You get to be wined and dined by your local value-added resellers.
Yeah, I think one of the things with Chrome OS, whenever I've come to look at, you know, am I going to buy a new Chrome OS device, it's kind of hard to know which one is the good one. What I kind of have found looking at Chromebooks is that they can tend to vary quite wildly in performance. And I've owned one really good Chromebook, which is actually Intel based, and one absolutely terrible Chromebook, which was ARM based. And, you know, that's not the only consideration you might want to have as well. You know, how good is the Wi-Fi chip, blah, 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 when you've got all these different parts going. I suppose in the Apple world, you know, we just go, which one's the fastest and which one can we afford? And that's kind of the considerations. And then how big storage do we get? Whereas in that world, you've got a lot of models. You've got a lot of models turning over relatively quickly. And almost all of them are kind of bespoke in some way. You know, they're not quite as completely standardized as PCs or even Macs for that matter. It's good and bad, and I think what you're starting to see is there's a much wider range of prices for Chromebooks than there ever has been before, but there's also a wider range of kind of design styles, if you like. So more and more you're seeing, you know, here's our three Chromebooks for this year, and here's the one for schools. And the one for schools is, as you might want in a school, of course, I'm not criticizing this idea, but it's ruggedized, it's a little bit more waterproof, you know, it's got a number of things. Maybe you pay for that in other ways, like it has a worse webcam, it has a lower resolution screen, it has a cheaper keyboard and trackpad, things like that. But it maybe has reinforced hinges for the screen, and it's got rubber bumpers on the corners and the kind of things you might tend to care about more in school. So that's, to me, that's kind of the interesting part for Chrome OS in school in some ways, is that you can get a device that is sort of designed to live in school and survive that experience without too much difficulty.
Next thing is, really, you don't have a lot of needed accessories. Most modern Chromebooks have built-in HDMI, built-in USB, built-in 3.5-inch ports, where obviously on iPad, you do need to buy some accessories to do different things using those. Again, depending on what you want to do, that could be a benefit. So it can save you some money there.
Yeah, and the other thing with that is that your Apple TV equivalent is also a whole lot cheaper. You know, you put a Chromecast on every screen in your school as well, and suddenly you've got, you can cast a Chrome tab onto your Chromecast, and that's your kind of equivalent. And in my experience, that has actually been vastly superior to AirPlay. I mean, it's honestly disgraceful how bad AirPlay is, considering the kind of power that you've got on both ends with the Apple TV and, you know, a high-end iPad, and it still just isn't that good. It's gotten better, but it's still just not anything like as good as Chromecast. On the same network, in the same room, in the same place, on the same accounts, it's just much, much better. And, you know, it's a quarter of the cost or less.
I actually think that AirPlay is in a lot of need of overhaul. I mean, I was thinking about, like, Spotify Connect. Well, like, I have a couple Amazon Fire TVs at home, and I can literally, from work, stream Spotify to them at home. It's not relying on being on the same network. It's just at the account level. And And I wonder if AirPlay needs something like that, where it's kind of like at the iCloud level, where it's like, okay, I know that these devices are signed into the same iCloud account, and so they can, you know, we're going to cast. And obviously, like, that doesn't work in a school environment, but maybe, like, maybe even the second tier of that is, like, it tries to pull it from the cloud first, and then if it's like a local, if it's like a Pages doc that you're trying to AirPlay, like, if it's something local only, just to sway it from the device. But if it's like a video from YouTube, like, pull it down from YouTube.com. Like, merge AirPlay with Chromecast, because that's how Chromecast works. Like, it's pulling it from the cloud, not from the device.
Yeah, you're essentially sending commands and casting a URL to the Chromecast, and then the Chromecast actually takes over and streams it itself. Whereas with AirPlay, and this is the kind of torturous and annoying thing about AirPlay, is that you're streaming it to the device, and then you're streaming it again over your network to the TV. So I would completely agree with you. The idea of being able to, you know, point an Apple TV to, you know, and I mean, who's to say that something like that couldn't be done if you had like the YouTube app on your iPad and the YouTube app on your Apple TV? Could they not communicate in some way and do something smart? But yeah, I'm a big fan of Chromecast. I think it's proven to be much, much more reliable than Apple TV. And that's mostly to Apple's shame as much as anything else.
Number 8 is easy management and rollout. These devices, honestly, are very easy to roll out. And this is really helpful for smaller schools without inexperienced IT administrators. It just is very simple. Like, you authenticate these things to your domain, and you can do a lot with them without ever touching them again.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, Bradley, what I would say is it's simple once you've got your G Suite completely set up correctly. You know, and that's... maybe that's fine, right? You know, you hire somebody to set up G Suite for you, and then you add on Chromebooks, and it's dead easy. But for me, like, the real Chrome OS device management is actually service access management at the G Suite level. And what you need to be is you need to be a pretty good G Suite admin. And I think, actually, to be honest, you have some of the same challenges with G Suite that you have with, say, you know, MDM for iPad, which is like, how do you build a sustainable organizational structure that copes with change and movement between levels and between permissions groups, and the organizational units that you build in G Suite, all that kind of stuff? You have to do all those kind of things in MDM as well. So I think for me, they're an easy add-on to an existing G Suite deployment, but you're still, like we said, even at the start of this program, you're still looking at essentially transitioning to G Suite on the back end if you want to have that easy rollout afterwards. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with like two accounts, you know, which one is a primary account, who's got your domain, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's still a good thing though, because how can I describe this? Like, I've talked about this with some colleagues who work in this business, and one of the things they've said to me is like, some of the schools we deal with are going Chrome OS, and that's good because it means the people they've got working for them can't screw up, you know. And in some ways, that's the reality sometimes, is that the fewer controls you have, the less you have a chance to get it wrong, you know. And iOS management, well, I don't necessarily think it's complicated. I think you still have to, how can I describe it? You have to sort of design the system a wee bit more yourself. You know, if you think about getting something like Jamf Pro set up and running, then you have to put in the user accounts, and you have to design the groups, and you have to, you know, scope the apps and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if you do that at the G Suite level, then your Chromebooks just kind of pick, they sort of slipstream into that, and they work really nicely that way.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. I've been talking, like, assuming that everybody has the G Suite already. You know, one of the things that's got me thinking about is in some ways reverse to what the iPad trend has been, where it's been more about moving away from the user account and more to device management, where on Chrome OS, it's largely about user account management, and the device just pulls from that.
Yeah, that's very much the way of it, I think, isn't it? And I wonder, you know, is that a kind of hangover from Windows admin thinking, you know, where the user profile runs all and the device is essentially a sort of generic host for the user account? Now, fortunately, of course, Chrome OS does a much better job of getting you logged in quickly with a minimal bandwidth hit compared to what Windows devices tend to do. But yeah, I think it's interesting. And although Apple are moving towards device management rather than user account management, there's still so much user state intermingled with the device management that this is where iOS, I think, has really got quite a serious structural problem, is when it comes to like backup and restore. Like that is, that almost feels like it's getting harder, you know, when it comes to a broken iPad. It's weird, yeah.
Okay, next on the list is the sharing is very easy in the Google ecosystem. So sharing documents, and this is as much a problem with iCloud and schools as it is anything. I mean, I can add someone here and I can easily share a document with them with ease. I mean, teacher walked in yesterday. It's wanted to share, need something on the website. Just said, share that doc with me. You know, if this was like in Pages, she would have to like, okay, what's your Apple ID? I mean, she doesn't have to know that. I mean, it's just, that's just our ecosystem we live in. I think that's a big win.
That's the benefit of having, you know, a unified single identity with G Suite is like, I don't have to ask you what your Google address is. It's just your email address, you know, and that's going to work for sharing. And that's, you know, we certainly get that experience a lot in school where we're working on something and I just share it with somebody by putting in their email address and that's the end of it. And I've even had that where I've tried like iCloud document sharing with Apple employees and I've used their apple.com email address and they've had to email me back going, actually, could you use this personal address for that because that's my Apple ID, you know? And I think Apple, what that is in some ways for the sharing workflow, that's Apple's next weakness, is the fact that they actually don't own your identity. In the way that Google owns your identity online, you know, and that's, for me, the sharing aspect of it is, it's important more to us from a kind of organizational point of view. So sharing between teachers and things like that, rather than between students as such. Now, I think that some people who are really into Chrome OS, I would say that they perhaps slightly overplay how important sharing is in school. And I think one of the reasons for that is that it's a kind of scarcity mindset that comes from people who have never worked in a one-to-one situation where, like for me, two people sharing something is occasionally important, but it's not a fundamental workflow. But if you look at like, oh, it's great, everything can be shared and it's in the cloud, that kind of speaks to a world where people have access to computers only intermittently and probably not enough computers, so that whoever happens to get the computer at that time can get access to something, rather than there are enough computers, they're essentially ubiquitous, and then the task is kind of a higher level than who's working on which document at which time. And I think that's sometimes something that people focus on a little bit too much is, you know, if we can just get people sharing, then something good will come out of that educationally. And it's not clear to me that that is true. The other reason that I don't necessarily think that is true is because at the end of the day, when it comes to your final exams, ain't nobody sharing anything at that point, because when you share at that level, we call that cheating and you get disqualified and expelled from the school. Or certainly you get zero in a lot of your exams. And that's one of my difficulties with the kind of, if you build in a culture that we share and we collaborate on everything, but you still have a part of your school system where you're absolutely not allowed to share and collaborate on something and you have to absolutely do it yourself. And then that's really a structural fault in education. It's not necessarily a reason to, or a reason against getting Chromebooks, but it's something that I think, if you look at that education and you say, well, sharing and collaboration is the number one best thing in education, maybe that's true, but if your education system isn't aligned with that belief, then you've got an impedance mismatch there, which is not necessarily anything to do with your choice of computer, but it's something that you have to consider the impact of on your students as they get older and they go into phases of education where sharing is not the thing that you do, rather than the thing that you do by default.
Yeah, that's great thoughts. Those are great thoughts. I mean, is it a huge, how important is that benefit? You know, it probably depends on your context.
Yeah, but it probably depends on your stage as well. But I think we've certainly seen that in Scotland, where kids who grew up in the early phases of Scottish education, which is very progressive, very constructivist, they have to go through a massive gear shift when they get to the senior phase, where it is nothing like constructivist education. It's very didactic, and it's very much individualized working. And that's something that we've seen some kids really struggle to make that transition between, we all work together, now you work by yourself. And that's something you just have to be careful of if you do have a step like that in your education system.
Last thing is, this is kind of piggybacking off one earlier, is this is the way that probably a lot of schools would go one-to-one first. And that's a huge win for a lot of schools. And at prices, you know, $199, $249, $299, I mean, these are capable devices. They're not the best. They're not $1,000 laptops, but they are machines that do work. They do get on the internet, and they do work.
Yeah, I mean, what I think is very interesting about Chromebook is that it tests a lot of people's claims from a few years ago. You know, when we were first doing the iPad program, a lot of people said, "Well, you know, is going one to one is great, but it needs to be £200." And now I'm like, "Well, okay, there have been devices for 5 years now that are £200. How come we're not all one to one?" You know, and the answer is, well, because it was never about the money in the first place. But there's no doubt that if you have a device that is half the price, you can get twice as many for the same amount of money. And that's, if that takes your school over the threshold of one-to-one, I am all for it, because I am a much stronger believer in one-to-one than I am a believer in iPad. I mean, I love the iPad and we've refreshed it a couple of times already, but if I had the choice of being one-to-one Chromebook or being shared iPad, I would be one-to-one Chromebook every single time, without question.
And I think that quote is a good place to end it for this week.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of observe one other thing, Bradley, which is that what we've talked about today, I think it tells its own story, like the structure of the show that we've done, where we've given a lot of the benefits for Chrome OS, but one of the things that it's probably worth observing is that a lot of the benefits that we have described, apart from, you know, your one-to-one, mostly accrue to the school, right? So things like they're easy to roll out, they're easy to repair, they're cheaper than iPads, you know, you can play vendors off against each other, you don't need to pay for more accessories, they're easy to manage, all of that stuff. Those are benefits for the school. They're not necessarily benefits for the students. And to me, that's something that, like, a Chrome OS is a competent device, but I kind of feel like the iPad might be more of an inspirational device. And that's something that more than one school has commented on to me, is that we, you know, students are not excited by Chromebooks in the same way than they maybe necessarily are excited about iPad. I don't know. But it's something just to bear in mind that I've always felt this about Chromebook, that they are very competent devices. And sometimes I look at it and I go, I wish iPad deployment was as easy as that. But then I look at what we do with iPad and I'm kind of like, well, yeah, I see where the effort goes and I see where the benefit is after that. So, and to me, that tells a story by itself, which is not to say there are no benefits to Chrome OS, but these are, it's just important, I think, to be clear as to where the benefits lie for most of the benefits you get.
I think there are fewer opportunities to screw it up, but the upside is not near as high.
Yeah, yeah. You can't fall. I mean, let's be clear, right? Some iPad deployments have fallen completely apart. You know, there have been spectacular failures, largely, I would argue, based on people's unwillingness or unreadiness to manage iOS in the way that it needs to be managed, or indeed at times, iOS's unreadiness to be managed at that scale. And I think at some level, the LAUSD thing was partly that iOS was just a little bit immature to be rolled out at that scale that quickly, with such tight security constraints put upon the deployment. So those are some of the things to think about. And I think I'm in no way against Chromebook. I think I have three Chromebooks kicking about somewhere here. But I think it's just worth bearing in mind who it is that's getting the benefit of all of these things. But one-to-one is such a huge benefit for students that if that's a device that gets you there, you know, good way to go.
Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. We'll be back next week with a different top 10 list on another device class. So check out our website, outofschool.net. You'd love a rating in iTunes, itunes.com/outofschool. Love to connect with you on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @BradleyChambers.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a good week, everybody.